Welcome to the Fit Chicks Chat Podcast, where we talk all things fitness, nutrition, and wellness for women to help you live your healthiest and fiercest life inside and out. And now, your hosts, Laura Jackson and Amanda Quinn.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to your Fit Chicks Chat. I'm Amanda Quinn.
And I'm Laura Jackson.
And Laura, in today's podcast, we are going to be talking about something that I think is really important. Obviously, I think that every podcast that we talk about, everything is important. But in this one in particular, we're actually going to be talking about some awesome tips on how to help our listeners fight those winter blues. Now, do you feel like you personally have tendencies towards seasonal affective disorder or any kind of blues or anything that affects you in the wintertime?
See, I'm not so much the winter time. Me, it's rain. It's when it's it's not necessarily winter specific. It's when it's when I was living, I used to live in Calgary, Alberta, and I was torn between moving to Vancouver, British Columbia, or back to Toronto. And I ended up, one of the major deciding factors was because it rains all the time in Vancouver, and that affects my moods. So I don't know if it's necessarily winter blues, but I'm definitely affected by weather. And but wintertime too, I find I get really stir crazy. By the end of winter, I'm okay, we're done now. Let's go. We need more sunlight.
Yeah, no, for sure. Because I mean, here in Canada, our winters they're quite long, or at least, they're wet about... we probably end up having snow where we are in Ontario. We probably end up having snow for about snow, cold, minus 30 degree weather for what, about 4 months, maybe five. But it feels so long. And I find, I don't think it's the seasonal affective disorder that I suffer from in the winter, but I definitely agree that weather affects me. Even this past week or so, it's been a crazy snowstorm. And I literally felt a prisoner trapped in my home because I couldn't leave because I just felt there was nowhere to go because it was so windy and snowy and cold. And it was just oh my gosh, it makes me feel really anxious. Today though, we're going to be talking specifically about SAD and some techniques on how to help you deal with SAD if you do have those tendencies. But even if you don't have specific, SAD stands for seasonal affective disorder. And if that doesn't necessarily affect you, or you don't think it affects you, but you maybe have some sort of tendencies towards when it starts getting a little bit gloomy outside and things like that, try some of these techniques because oftentimes they will help. They will encourage you to kind of get past whatever sort of mood or effect that it's having on you. Because they say that, they actually say that in Canadians specifically, about 15% of us will feel the effects of SAD at some point in our lifetime. And, it is one of those, it is a seasonal affective disorder that causes anxious feelings, feeling of sluggishness and an overall just depressed sort of feeling. So definitely not something that we really want to be, feeling or just having to sit with. So let's talk about some techniques on how we can help combat that. So the first technique, and these are all natural ways that you can help combat SAD. And so the first one is actually with light therapy. And I'm sure, Laura, you've probably heard of this before.
I have, but I don't know much about it.
Well, so light therapy is basically, it's the best studied treatment for SAD. So it's the number one thing that most studies have sort of dove into deeply. And basically what it is it's using special artificial lights that help combat SAD. Over 60 to 80% of the people actually find relief when they're using this type of technique. So basically it's almost they say that you should probably use it in the mornings, within the first hour of waking up, and you should use it for about 20 to 30 minutes. You want to have it at a distance from your face, about 16 to 24 inches. And you want to keep your eyes open, but don't look directly at the light. So whenever I say that, I always feel like I'm in some weird horror.
I know. Don't look into the light.
But definitely with the SAD, you don't want to be looking directly into it because it's obviously not going to be good for your eyes, but you want to be looking at the light so that it is actually shining on your face. The whole premise of this is that it's emitting a little UV light basically onto you. It's artificial, yes, but what it's doing is it's mimicking sort of the sun, because it basically, we don't believe, like, we don't get enough sunshine or sunlight here in Canada during the winter months, oftentimes because we're either cooped up inside because it's way too cold to be outside, or because there's just not that much sun. It's like snowing a lot of overcast, et cetera. And so basically by using this light therapy boxes, researchers believe that this type of light causes a chemical change in your brain that it will actually lift your mood and ease the other symptoms. So really cool, something that's not, you know, it's not a difficult thing to do to incorporate into your life. And I actually have a friend of mine who used to suffer from SAD, and she ended up getting a light therapy box that was actually set up as an alarm clock. And it was super cool because what it would do is, instead of it just being like, you know, this big bright light that you just turn on and whatever, her alarm, it would start going off about 10 minutes before she would get up, I believe. It was like 10 or 15 minutes before she was supposed to get up, but it would almost be like a sunrise in her bedroom. So the light would slowly increase. So it would be like, you know, just nice and light, like little bit of light, little bit of light. And then all of a sudden it would be like the full blown sort of like the full blown sunrise kind of thing. So then she would have that. And she said that she definitely felt a lot better, and she would leave it on while she was getting ready for work, et cetera. And then
those types of alarm clocks too, they're also very, they're used a lot for people who work shift work. If you're having any type of, like, if you wake up and it's dark outside and you go to bed and it's light outside, obviously your circadian rhythm, which is your natural sleep-wake cycles, is disrupted, right? Because we are naturally supposed to wake up with the sun and go to bed. But if you're working shift work and you are getting up, let's say, at 3 o'clock in the morning to go to work, it's a really effective way to help make sure that you are getting into deeper sleeps and you're not disrupting those sleep, your body as much, because your body actually thinks that, oh, 3 o'clock in the morning is the sunrise. So I know a lot of people too.
Interesting.
Who work, like, you know, in media and stuff like that, and they have to be at the morning show. So they're up at like 3 o'clock in the morning to get there for 4 to get hair and makeup done. And they have those alarm clocks.
Interesting. That's such a good point though. I would never have thought of that, but it totally makes sense because, I mean, getting up in the darkness is just really tough, right?
Yeah, and the other
thing, get up in the morning and it's dark and...
Oh, I know. It's brutal. And the other thing, when it comes to actually light therapy, when it comes to light in general, the thing with SAD is that SAD is, like, seasonal affective disorder, it is highly tied to vitamin D. So SAD is actually worsened and a lot of times caused by a vitamin D deficiency. And where do we get vitamin D? From the sun. So there are a lot of people who even use tanning beds, which I'm not recommending tanning beds, but there's a lot of people who actually do use tanning beds to help with the winter blues, because the light and there is a small amount of vitamin D that you do get from that. But if you are feeling like hardcore effects of SAD, definitely get your vitamin D levels checked. You have to get them checked by your doctor. But that's usually a contributing factor or the causing factor. So if you start to support that through things like light therapy, through diet, through supplementation, then you will actually most likely get rid of your symptoms.
Interesting. Very cool.
Well, that's why it's like, it's great, the stuff that we're talking about, but so many times when it does come to things like this, there is some sort of deficiency going on. Mm-hmm. And that's where, like, there's strategies, obviously, but usually it's a deficiency in a vitamin in our bodies.
Definitely. And I agree with you on that for sure. I do think that you should get it checked, but I think these techniques are more or less for, like, day to day to kind of keep you in balance as well, right? Because sometimes people just even, they may not even have, it might just even be like an anxious feeling, just because, like, maybe it's not full blown seasonal affective disorder, but maybe it's just something where they're just feeling like a little bit anxious because of just the gloominess outside.
Well, yeah, and I think the best thing to do is to incorporate all types of things. You know what I mean? Like, always start with checking, like, and like I was saying, especially when it comes to wintertime stuff, because we make vitamin D from the sunlight, right? Mm-hmm. And when there's limited sunlight, our bodies can't make vitamin D. And even if we eat foods that are really high in vitamin D, we still, the most usable form by our body is from the sun. So usually we get our stores up until November, then by February, they're used up. And then we're still, you know, in quite a few more months of darkness. And that's why they say February is actually the hardest month of the year, because that's where we get rid of all of our stores. And then it's usually like the darkest month of the year.
Yeah.
So, you know, to support it, the vitamin D, but then using like things like this to take it to the next level is the best thing to do. Because you got to hit the root cause, right? Like, it's always the root cause, and then things like this are like the accessories to help support.
Definitely. Well, on that, actually, our second point is actually, it was talking a little bit about vitamin D. So you've already kind of jumped ahead, which is great. Our second point in sort of how you can use some natural ways to help you combat seasonal affective disorder is to take a forest bath. And I read about that. That's actually how Japanese researchers from environmental health and preventative medicines call taking, basically heading outside and going for a hike. They call it taking a forest bath. So I thought it was kind of funny.
I was like, in the middle of winter in Ontario, I am not taking a forest bath. It would be like minus 50. Yeah,
the bath would freeze. No, that's just how they refer to it. So basically what they're saying, and the Japanese researchers for environmental health and preventive medicines basically produced a report showing that people that take a 20-minute forest bath, aka walk in the woods, had lower stress hormones than those in urban settings. And it's also proven that nature has this amazing effect on our moods and overall mindset. So head outside when the sun is shining, get your fresh air, get your fresh perspective, and also get your vitamin D. Because even though you, like what we were just talking about with the vitamin D, like it's not as prominent and it's not as, you can't absorb it as much in the wintertime here in Canada, but it still adds to your body. Like it's still going to give you something. So because, and as you were saying, you know, vitamin D is something that our bodies cannot produce without sunshine or without taking a supplement. So if you are thinking of taking a supplement because heading outdoors in like minus 40 is not something that you're into and you're not into taking a forest bath, they say that you should take a supplement of no more than 2000 IU per day in the winter.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't agree with any of those supplementation recommendations though, because I think everyone has such a specific level of vitamin D that like, even though that's like, you know, the recommended daily intake, but we're also different, right? So like the best thing to do is to go and get your levels checked by the doctor, because they'll tell you exactly how much you need. So then you're not over supplementing or under supplementing.
But could it change though? Like couldn't your needs change on a weekly basis or a monthly basis?
Well, not really, because you usually have like built it up throughout, you know what I mean? Like throughout the year. So as you're going into the winter months, they'll tell you what you need. But even saying like, that's like, you know, there's a lot of supplementation that is recommended as a recommended daily intake, but it's way too low. So people are just taking the minimum thinking that, or not even the minimum, it's like lower than the minimum. So just, it depends on what you need. And also depends on like, even for vitamin D, like if you are a redhead and have pale skin, you make way more vitamin D in the summertime than if you are someone who is, let's say, African or African American. The darker your skin, the less vitamin D you make. So it's those things come into factors. So yeah, when it comes to supplementation, I just always think the best thing to do is everyone's such a specific individual that it's the best thing to do is get tested for it.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. But at the same time, for someone who maybe is just like wanting to, you know, just add in a supplement, would you not recommend that they at least just follow that as it's sort of their, like a status quo? If they, maybe they just don't have a doctor that they can go to right away to do these tests.
I don't know. When it comes to any type of like stuff, I don't like giving broad statements because I think it just really depends. It really, really depends. There's so many things that depend it on. You know what I mean? Like, so I wouldn't say like, oh, just take this much. I think that it really depends on your specific situation.
Okay. Well, that is sort of what the recommended dosage is. So, and I'm definitely not a doctor, nor am I a nutritionist. So I will just leave it at that and allow for, you know, our listeners to sort of make that judgment call in terms of, you know, if they're going to follow the recommendations or if they are going to go to their doctor. I do agree with you that I do think getting your blood work done and getting, you know, checked out to be sure that you're even deficient in those areas is a good idea. For sure. All right. So moving on, number three, in terms of ways to combat naturally, to combat your, if you're having seasonal affective disorder, is using yoga. So yoga is something that is just like a great natural resource because like exercise, it releases serotonin in the body. It helps you get more of those happy hormones going. And one of the really big things is to actually look at, there's a couple of different types of yoga that are actually seen to be a little bit more ideal for this type of affective disorder. And so that's basically Kundalini yoga is something that is seen to be really great because it actually focuses on the seven chakras. And Hatha is also something that's really great for balancing your moods. Because they're a little bit slower paced and they focus on a lot of breathing techniques, it actually helps to bring in more oxygen into your body and it's just a slower flow. So you're not actually creating stress because there are some yoga types, especially in today's sort of society, like power yoga or, you know, like those hot yogas and things like that, that can actually create more stress in your body. And so when you are looking for something that is going to be like a natural resource to help you kind of bring down that anxiety and to kind of calm your central nervous system, et cetera, you want to be looking at something that is going to actually do that. So Kundalini and Hatha is definitely recommended, the two recommended, top recommended ones. Also pranayama breathing and restorative yoga. So definitely ideal for combating this disorder and relaxing your body overall. And if you're not sure about pranayama breathing, what that is, what that means, it's like big, deep belly breathing. And I mean, you can definitely, my recommendation is whenever you're looking at doing some kind of breathing techniques is check out, like literally Google it on YouTube or something like that, like search it and actually watch a video on it before you start doing it. Because some breathing techniques, if you start doing them on your own and you're not totally sure what it is, you can actually create, like there's certain types of breathing techniques that create fire, they say, within you. So the energy. And if you're creating more energy, but you're actually trying to sort of restore and repair and calm down, it's going to create kind of the opposite effect. So for this specifically, definitely check out anything around pranayama breathing. Restorative yoga could be also written, you might see it on schedules as yin yoga. If you see that, that's definitely one as well that is something that can bring you sort of calm and balance in your body. And then the last thing is with yoga is also about headstands. Now, if you don't know about headstands, or if you're like, not really into headstands, or I'm nervous to try them, I totally get it. Like they're like, it's like a nerve-wracking thing to go upside down. But headstands are amazing for so many different reasons, but specifically when we're talking about SAD, it's really great because it actually helps to stimulate and bring fresh blood flow to your, oh my gosh, I'm going to butcher this word, hypothalamus.
Hypothalamus.
And the pituitary glands, which is a set of master glands, which helps to regulate our bodies and other glands and hormones. So by refreshing, it refreshes your sexual hormones, detoxifies your adrenal glands. So just by doing regular handstands, you can improve your sex life as well as increase positive thought and general well-being. So if you're not sure, again, with headstands, that is one thing that I always recommend, like go to a class, go to a specific, they have tons of workshops out there, specifically around headstands. If you've never done one before, there's like a step-by-step process that you can get into it to learn how to do them properly. But definitely you want to learn the technique before you just like go for it, because it's, you know, you're going to be putting pressure on you, the top of your head, on your neck, on your spine, that kind of thing. If you don't know what you're doing, don't just try to guess. I recommend highly that you definitely go for some sort of a workshop or some sort of technique building at a class. But if you can and you know how to do them, I recommend highly try to do them one a day, every day, first thing in the morning, hold a headstand, 10 breaths. You know, in Ashtanga, we do 10 breaths and then we hold halfway in like a jackknife position for another 10 and then go back up for another 10 breaths. So you're actually in it for 30 breaths, which is really long breaths. So it ends up being quite a few minutes depending on how you're feeling that day. Definitely, it's something that just completely provides benefit to you, to your brain function, to everything. So recommend it. Laura, do you like doing headstands at all?
I am not a big headstand person, but that's also because it's not, I don't really practice a lot of yoga, but I like love the benefits of being upside down. Because so one of the things that actually I do, which someone told me once, and I do it sometimes if I've been feeling really emotional, is like even laying on your bed and then just have your head hanging off the bed, as long as you don't have any neck or upper back problems. Because what ends up happening is, like you were saying, like we don't have any fresh blood rushing to our brains most of the time, or to the tops of our head too. Most of the time when we're horizontal, obviously that's when the blood can flow the easiest throughout the body, but we don't get that blood all the way upside down. So it's very, like, I believe, and there's studies that show for it and studies that show, you know, that this isn't true, but that's like anything in life. There's always going to be studies for people's best interest, what they think is, you know, what they want to prove. Mm-hmm. But studies that show just that how much that fresh blood produces in terms of memory, like you were saying, in terms of happiness. A lot of people who deal with depression, it's highly recommended to even hang upside down. Like you can buy like those, they almost look like sex swings, I guess, but you just hang upside down.
Yeah, those apparatuses. Yeah.
Yeah. Like I know a lot of celebrities do it, but it's proven to help with depression because we're not getting that blood flow all the way throughout the brain all the time.
Well, I remember my yoga teacher telling me, like, he's like, if you think about it, other than doing headstands or handstands or anything else, when are you ever upside down other than like in the birth canal? Like no, once we're born, we're just like, we're upright. You know what I mean? Well, obviously like when we're babies, you're kind of like throwing your body around and like I've, you know, doing all these crazy things or whatever. But generally speaking, I would say what 99% of our day we are spent like upright, like in terms of you're never really upside down unless you're picking something up and you're like dropping your head down or you're doing specific exercises that your head goes down. You know what I mean? But other than that, you're pretty much always upright. So you're never really getting that fresh blood flow. So it's like, it's such a huge benefit though. So why not try it?
Well, that's even when, you know, like you're saying, the birth canal or like even in the womb, there's so much oxygen. I mean, so much blood going to the brain. Like a lot of times the baby is like upside down.
Yeah.
So it's like, and the reason being is to help to nourish the brain and get obviously like to grow the brain. And that's the most important thing of a baby when you're first being made in the tummy. So, yeah. So I think I don't do headstands, but even just going upside down, you know, putting your head, like even just doing a forward bend. So your head is facing the floor, hinging your hips and going forward. If you're not comfortable doing a forward headstand, it's a great way just to start in the morning to get fresh blood to the brain. Also, if you have problems waking up, I find it really helps just doing like a standard forward bend or laying on your bed and just letting your head hang off the bed. The only thing though is sometimes if you do have any neck problems, that can be a little bit strenuous. So a forward bend is usually better, but head below the heart, it's so good for so many things.
Yeah. Same as like downward dog position, same sort of idea. But as long as if you are doing downward dog position, you're trying to like actually get blood to your brain, drop your head and like bring your chin towards your chest so that you can drop your head completely. A lot of times people have a lot of strain in their neck and they're actually looking towards their hands. But when you're doing it, you're actually supposed to be looking towards your belly button. So keep that in mind if you're looking for different techniques on how to get that blood to the brain.
Well, it's also interesting because I know you were talking about the hypothalamus and the pituitary gland, which is like two of the major glands of the endocrine system. And they release the pituitary, like the hypothalamus basically tells the pituitary what to do. So they kind of work together. But they release all of like growth hormone and so many different hormones like that trigger the other glands to produce their hormones. So that's two things, but also the pineal gland, which is the gland, the three glands that are in the brain. The pineal gland is also known as the third eye. When we talk about like yoga and stuff, like when you hear the third eye, that's actually the pineal gland. And the pineal gland produces melatonin and serotonin, which are your happy chemicals. And melatonin is part of your sleep-wake cycles too. So again, if you are someone who is experiencing sad, a lot of times you're probably either sleeping too much or you're not sleeping enough. So there's probably something going on there with your melatonin, and you're probably not producing enough serotonin, which is one of your happy drugs. So again, you know, going upside down, not just the those two glands, but stimulating that third eye and the pineal gland. Because that's what I find. The reason why I started going upside down actually was because it was supposed to help with like brain function and with memory. So that's one of the things that I find as well that it helps with too.
It's so funny because you just every time you keep jumping to the very next point. Because in the next one, you're going to be talking about the pineal gland.
I'm leading in.
No, I'm just saying it's just funny because it's like it's actually like what you're talking about is going in order of my points because the next point is all talking about the pineal gland. So
we love the pineal gland.
Well, let's talk about it. So basically the next point is on how to naturally sort of help affect combat, at least SAD, would be through meditation. And so there's scientific evidence that proves that meditation is helpful in the management of SAD. And one of the theories is that the main cause of winter blues is the disturbance of the physiology of the pineal gland, which is the small organ located in the middle brain that regulates the patterns of sleeping and waking up. It's stated that meditation actually stimulates the function of the pineal gland, inducing the secretion of melatonin, which promotes relaxation and feelings of happiness. So exactly what you were just talking about, but you were talking about it from like a perspective of like the headstands and everything else, but also with meditation, it's proven that it actually helps to affect the pineal gland as well. So, and then there's another study that was actually shown that 50%, there's been a 50% decrease in depression symptoms after practicing meditation for up to 12 months. So it's one of those things where, and I know with meditation, it's something that a lot of times people feel really like nervous about it, or they feel like it's like all hippy dippy, or it's something that they would never be able to do because they can't get focused, or they get really frustrated when they do it. And like, if they feel like it's like a, like, I don't know, like it's a huge challenge, right? And I think with like with anything, it can be that way if you see it that way, or you can see it as a tool and a technique and a practice and something that you're learning. With meditation, it doesn't have to be, you don't have to think of it from a religious standpoint either. There are some people that feel like it's sort of like a religious kind of thing, and you don't have to think of it from any of those perspectives. You can generally think of it as, this is a technique and this is a tool that I'm using to focus my mind better, to, you know, allow myself to find like a center, to find calm, to increase this like happy sort of feeling, to increase my function of my pineal gland. So you can think of it from all different perspectives. You don't have to consistently think of it as like a, as like, this is something that I have to do or whatever. And, you know, one of the things that I talk about when I teach our meditation workshop at our Fit Chicks retreats is that it doesn't have to be the same all the time. And there's so many times that people feel like meditation has to be like, oh, well, you have to meditate for 20 minutes a day, every day, and you have to do it at the same time. You have to do it in the same place, and you have to sit a certain way, and you have to do all these things. It doesn't have to be that way. Like meditation, the simplest way I can explain it is focus on your breathing, your breath. Like when you want to think about it as like just the simplest form of meditation, focus on your breath coming into your belly and out of your belly. Close your eyes, find a comfortable position to sit, and literally breathe in through your nose and out through your nose, and just focus on feeling the breath going in and out of your belly. And when you start doing that, you just try to stay focused. And when you find as though your brain starts to like jump around and be like, oh, but what am I going to have for dinner? And what's happening over there? And this and that. That's what happens with our brain, right? Like it's not focused and we're kind of all over the place. And the whole point of meditation is to try to bring your focus centered. So the biggest thing that I can say is if you are trying to practice meditation, think of it as a practice. Don't think of it as like a chore and don't think of it as like a test to see if you do it right or wrong. There's no right or wrong. When your brain goes and starts thinking about dinner instead of thinking about your breath, as soon as you notice that it's thinking about dinner, just be like, oh, and then come back to your breath. Recognize it. Don't do anything with it. Don't continue on that thought process, but recognize like, oh, thought, and then bring it right back to your breath. Because eventually, as a practice, it will become more of a technique. It'll become more of a tool. It'll become something that'll become a little bit more simple. And also with time, it doesn't have to have a set time. Like I know there's so many things to say, like you have to do it for 20 minutes or this or that. When I sit and meditate, I do it until I feel like I'm done. Some days it's 2 minutes. Some days it's half an hour. It really depends. And every day it's dependent on just, I guess, what I need. You know, and the last thing I want to do is have a clock beside me, because then all I'm going to be doing subconsciously is being like trying to peek out of my like peripheral vision to see, has it been 20 minutes? You know what I mean? And it's a distraction. So you really want to just try to stay focused on exactly what it is that you're trying to do, which is get your brain focused, calm down your central nervous system, bring in your thoughts so that you can stay a little bit more focused and aware. Sorry, that was like a big explanation on meditation, but you know how I feel about meditation.
No, but I think it's really important. And I think it's really important too that you were mentioning about, you know, that there is no right or wrong. There is no, you know, like we always talk about this in our fitness nutrition expert program. Like, and even when I was just talking about the vitamin D stuff, it's like, there are baselines that people give you, you know, but there is no right or wrong answer, because everyone is completely different and we are all beautiful and unique and strong and in our own different ways. You know what I mean? So when somebody tells you like, this is how you should do it, and that doesn't feel like it's working for you, then that means it doesn't work for you. And you've got to find a different strategy. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. So it's like, yes, use all this stuff. Even we're telling you guys as like, it's a baseline. It's a place to start from, but then listen to your body and see what works for you as well.
Definitely. All right. And then moving on to our final point. So this is number 5, our fifth way that you can help combat your SAD, is through exercise. And I know this is both of our number one sort of scenarios. And again, like, I mean, we were talking about earlier, it's not necessarily to combat SAD, but definitely would you say exercise for you helps you to create sort of those happy feelings and create that kind of, you know, that stress relief and everything else in your body, which also can can translate to feelings that people have that they're dealing with when they are actually dealing with SAD.
Yeah. Like I think movement is the first thing that helps with anything. And I think it just really gets, obviously, like there's so many things that happen within the body in terms of, you know, the actual like physical changes. Like it's a natural mood enhancer. You actually will, your physiology changes. You start to relieve stress. You start to breathe differently. You need more oxygen in. Like there's so many things that happen that actually are proven to make you feel happier. But also it's just, I don't know. Like I just find there's a quote I always see, or you know how to call it, the memes. one that I always like, and it's like, I regretted that workout, said no one ever. You know what I mean? Like no one ever actually finishes their workout and be like, damn it, I wish I never did that workout today. Like usually when you don't want to go and you leave thinking, yes, I'm happy I did that today. You know, like, so it's one of those things that it will always make you feel better. I find like you'll never feel worse after workout than you did going into it. You might not enjoy it while you're there. You might be like, damn it, I wish I was at home watching TV. But usually afterwards you're like, okay, sweet. And I find that it just helps. It helps, helps lift your mood, helps lift your spirits.
No, I totally agree with you 100%. And actually, you know, according to the Journal of Psychiatry and Neuroscience, they found that exercise can actually have the same effects on you as antidepressants. So they promote growth of new neurons in the brain, and it's been proven. that it is a natural mood enhancer, stress reliever, way to manage cognitive performance and energy levels. And, you know, I think the irony, though, of all of this is that a lot of times people feel during this time, especially if you are dealing with SAD and you are kind of feeling like depressed, oftentimes you feel like you have zero energy to even to exercise. You're just like, because you're feeling depressed and you're feeling tired and you feel sluggish and all of these things. And you're just like, oh, I can't even imagine doing that. But if you did and you had a plan in place in order to commit to doing some exercise, oftentimes that will actually enhance your mood completely. It'll change everything and you'll actually feel a million times better. So it's kind of this catch-22. So it's almost like what I'm saying is, even if you are feeling those feelings of sad, or even if it's not sad specifically, but you are having those like winter blues kind of coming on and you're feeling like, oh, I just don't want to do anything, that's when you need to kind of really dig deep and be like, no, I have to do something, because it's only going to help you.
Oh my gosh. Like, it's crazy how much when you're in those like moods, how like literally my body feels tireder by doing nothing. My body feels more sore by doing nothing. Like, if I lay on the couch all day, I am more sore than if I did sometimes like a crazy weight workout. And it's so weird. Like, it's very interesting how the body works.
No, for sure. And like, if you're feeling exhausted or something like that, and if you move, oftentimes you just, I don't know, like you just have like this new life within you, you know? So it's an interesting thing, but definitely, you know, like I said, it is something that like the Journal of Psychiatry and Neuroscience actually said, like, this is something that is very similar. It will react the same way. Exercise will react the same way by promoting growth hormones in your brain that antidepressants do. So when you hear that, it's like, okay, so if there's that much benefit to it, I really should just like, you know, that's when I really feel like anyone out there, find a way to incorporate movement into every day, because it's so important for your physical well-being, but also your mental well-being. Okay. Well, with that being said, we're going to wrap this up for today. So as we talked about, we were just talking about the five techniques that were natural techniques on how you can help combat SAD in some ways. The first one was about light therapy. So looking at it from getting a light therapy box that mimics the outdoor light, definitely a huge thing. And I love your point about using it for shift work people as well, because I never would have thought of that. But definitely, even if it's not necessarily SAD related, but something that is going to help you sort of combat any kind of negative feelings or help you wake up even, definitely give that a try. The second one was about taking a forest bath, right? So going outside in a forest, in nature, get involved in nature, get some sunlight in you. The third was about using yoga as a great technique. Again, Kundalini and Hatha yoga are two of the top sort of recommended for this type of balancing techniques. And the fourth was using meditation, because you want to help with the pineal gland, which we were talking about quite a bit today. And then the fifth one again is exercise, which again, Laura and I both feel the exact same way in this, that it's kind of our number one go-to for anything is exercise, whether it's stress-related, depression-related, exhaustion, anything. It's like, I got to work out because I know it's going to change everything. So find, though, what works for you. Those are the five natural techniques. But again, as Laura said in the beginning, you know, if you do feel like you have some sort of deficiency, or if you feel like you are suffering from some sort of a disorder, go to your doctor, get it checked out, make sure that you are correct and you're not just kind of self-diagnosing or like using Wikipedia to figure it out. And, you know, make sure that you're figuring out sort of what you should be doing in order to help you specifically. So Laura, what would be your number one takeaway from today's podcast?
My number one takeaway is just really focus on self-care. And I think that a lot of times we, unless you're kind of in certain industries, or you know what I mean? Like us, we talk about self-care all the time. So to me, if you said to me, you know what, Laura, I'm having a self-care day, you don't even need to explain another word, I'm like, totally understand. You know what I mean? Like, but a lot of people, yeah, it's not part of the everyday conversation, and we tend to not honor our feelings, honor our bodies, and take out those times to do the things that are going to support your healing and your growth. So I know for me, I've been through a lot of therapy in my life and I love therapy. FYI, I think everyone should be able to have that experience because it just gives you a chance to really explore things that sometimes you don't get a chance to in your everyday.
Hell yeah.
Like the first, every time, like at the end, my therapist would be like, you know, just make sure, like when people say, just make sure you're taking care of yourself. And my therapist actually says, just make sure you're practicing self-care. And I found that even by saying that in a different way, it triggers me to remind me of the things I do that are self-care. So like my exercise, mm-hmm. like my gratitude journaling, like getting out in nature, things for me that work for my body and my emotions. Because sometimes when people just say, take care of yourself, you know, you don't really, you're like, okay, yeah. Like,
yeah, it's not, it doesn't really connect deeply.
Yeah. So when someone says to me, you know, just make sure you're practicing self-care, I'm like, yep. And then now I'm able to recognize when I know that things are coming on, like something like sad or like, you know, a low time in my life, I know that I need to go into a place where I'm supporting myself emotionally. So as well as physically. So yeah. So just everyone listening, I just hope that these are some ways from today that you can help to learn some self-care techniques, especially during times where you are going to feel emotionally imbalanced, whether that be a season, whether that be an event, whatever it is, just hopefully these things will help you practice some self-care.
Great. No, that's awesome. And I guess my main takeaway would be to follow what you were just saying, and then also to try out these different techniques and figure out which one works for you, but also don't be hard on yourself, because oftentimes, especially like when we were talking about some techniques that are like, you know, like I said, like meditation, yoga, headstanding, things like that, that like, I mean, going for a hike is something that could be a lot more natural. But things when, you know, when I'm talking about a headstand, like people could be like, well, how am I ever going to do that? And we become really hard on ourselves. And then you're actually just sort of creating more anxiety potentially. Right. So just try things and try to be playful with it. Try to be open to it, open-minded to it, and think of everything as a practice. Try not to think of it as like a competition with yourself or a competition with anybody else. Think of it as like just a very open sort of opportunity to try new things, because maybe those techniques will not work for you, and that's fine. If it doesn't connect with you, let it go and find the things that do, because the worst thing you can do is just keep pushing and pushing and hammering away at yourself and feeling like you're not good enough or that you're a failure in these certain areas, even though it's just meant to be helpful for you. So let go of the idea that it has to be perfect. Let go of the idea that it has to be a certain way. Let go of the idea that you have to be great at these things right away, because it's not something that may come naturally, even exercise, you know? So give yourself a break, but also make sure to be open to these ideas and at least try them and explore and see what's going to work best for you. All right. Well, with that being said, we are going to wrap up for today. So thank you all so much for listening. As always, if you have questions, comments, anything you want us to talk about, email us info@fitchicks.ca. We'd love to hear from you. You can also check us out on social media at fitchicks.ca and at Fitchicks Bootcamp on Facebook. And of course, check out our fitchicksacademy.com website. We've got some amazing new courses coming out. On those courses, we're talking about natural weight loss coaches, and we also have another certification program that is all about our fitness and nutrition expert certification. So if you're looking to further educate yourself, or if you're looking to actually become certified to then help others in your community, check them out. If you have any questions, email us, and we'd be happy to be in touch. All right. Thank you again for listening, and have yourself an amazing day. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Fit Chicks Chat Podcast. Want more healthy love? Visit www.fitchicks.com for amazing resources, free workouts, recipes, tips, and so much more to help you live your healthiest and fiercest life inside and out.